Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, the 9th of May, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be here.
I'm so pleased you're here with us. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, so it's raining where I am, but apparently it's snowing where John is.
Yes, it's snowing right now.
So all the weather on this podcast, because it's going to be 90 degrees in Portland today.
So
I think that's all. Well, we're missing raining frogs, but I think that might be it. I think tune in for tomorrow when the weather forecast contains locusts. So the first thing I wanted to talk about today actually wasn't weather at all, but an interesting interview that Angela Ahrendts did after having left Apple. Now, Andrew, you covered the initial interview, but John, you sat and listened to the interview and you had some thoughts.
I did. Angela talked about her sort of life and times and growing up in Indiana and moving to New York and going to school, discovering that she wasn't really a design person. She was a marketing person. And then being enlisted to work at Burberry. So there was really only 5 minutes at the end, which she talked about at Apple. She's a very humble, very sincere person who was kind of overwhelmed, as she describes it, by her initial exposure to Apple. She was brilliant at Burberry, but that's clothing. And Apple technology has so much implicated in our lives that when you come to Apple, it's not just stores and retail and clothing and what the store salesmen are going to wear and how they're going to present themselves. But there's all that technology that is involved and it's implicit. And we were all born knowing it, except Angela, who came in from, you know, London and back to the States and started working in a company where she admits she was just, knew nothing. People use acronyms and talk about technologies that were completely foreign and alien to her. And so she talked about what she learned. And the first one was never forget where you come from. Mm-hmm. You're hired for a reason. You have specific skills. Tim Cook believed in her. You don't have to be a software developer to be a marketer. And you don't have to be an expert in marketing to be a software developer. So everybody has their individual higher strength. And Tim Cook saw something in her that he wanted, and he believed in her. And he said, you belong with this company. And so having signed up for that, she felt amazed and overwhelmed at the people around her and the technology. And she spent 6 months sort of coming up to speed and speaking the Apple speak and talking the Apple talk and walking the Apple walk. So her first advice was, stay grounded in what you are and what you bring to the company. You were hired for a reason. Be confident, be self-confident, and mm-hmm. don't try to do other people's jobs or compete with them. The second thing she said was move fast. The customer's watching and waiting for you to catch up as a company. And that pace of technology is just implicit in everything we do in digital technology and the internet. And if his employee, as an employee, you can't afford to sort of sit back and relax and stay with the status quo as a palliative for being overworked, because everybody at Apple's overworked. And it's just part of the job. There's so much to do and you're having so much fun. So much stuff comes at you. And so that's why some people burn out at Apple after a few years. They're just not ready to sustain that kind of pace. And as the Navy SEALs say, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so that's the second item. And employees who expect to be constantly rewarded and patted on the back and there to be micro bookkeeping on every little good thing that they do are going to be disappointed, because working for Apple is the reward.
Right.
Not little bits and pieces here where you get attaboys all the time. And third, never forget your responsibilities. I thought this was very interesting, and I felt it at Apple. Each employee is an inheritor of the company's legacy, and you feel that. I was there when Steve Jobs was the CEO, and you're just constantly on edge, worrying that you'll bump into him in the elevator. you're enthralled with the technology you're surrounded by and the quality of the people. And the building architecture, Infinite Loop, is pretty nice, not comparable to Space Park. But in its day, it was a pretty awesome building, mm-hmm. and it still is.
Well, it's still a great building,
You walk into the building and you feel the atmosphere. You go to Cafe Max for lunch, and you see your idol, somebody you've admired for years, sitting at a table across from you. Mm-hmm. And you just feel this overwhelming sense of joy and responsibility to represent Apple correctly. Mm-hmm. So... then there comes a time to move on and pass what you've learned on to other people, as she is trying to do. So it was a giddy experience working for Apple, and I felt it, and she felt it, and those were the takeaways that she handed off to us from her experience at Apple.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. What stood out in that to you, Andrew?
What John was saying, she listed her three takeaways from Apple, and she mentioned that responsibility one, where she said, never forget that you have a greater responsibility. And she says she thinks that's what Steve meant when he talked about enriching lives. And I think that's important for the tech industry, where you're working with technology, but ultimately, you're creating things for people. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a personal believer in this movement where some people say that STEM should be extended to STEAM, A for art.
Yeah.
And I think I agree with that. I think that's important. And it just lets you see the world in a much more broader way than just like machine oriented.
There are companies, Andrew, that build a product sort of in a Dilbert kind of way, and they wrap marketing around it, and they make you feel like you need to buy the product. And then you find out it bites you, either in the privacy agreement or in some feature that you weren't expecting, in some way that attacks you or irritates you as a customer. And
yeah.
The responsibility to build products that please customers and serve them and bring them joy and help them be more productive is an awesome responsibility, and Apple takes that seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the thing I remember from, and we still get these once in a while, but in the ad campaigns, like previous iPhone television ad campaigns and iPad campaigns, and the even back to the what's on your PowerBook kind of ads. Back in the day, yes, I said PowerBook. I'm kicking it old school today, yo. It's Throwback Thursday, right? So we can talk about PowerBooks. one of the things that I always thought stood out was Apple always talked about, or in their ads, it always portrayed their products in use. Like this is a person using an iPad on a tripod to shoot video of a thing, right? Or this is somebody using an iPhone to do some sort of awesome thing that they clearly couldn't have done if they didn't have an iPhone, right? Or, you know, mm-hmm. what's on your PowerBook? They would have two different, it was a print ad, and they would have two different people, and they would show down each side of the page, like, what was on that person. I think Henry Rollins was one of them, and it was like, you know, what's on your PowerBook? And it would have, like, what was on Henry Rollins's computer, and what was on this other person's computer, who was, like, you know, some sort of high-powered executive or whatever, some other known sort of business figure, you know, and it would show that both of them can use the same computer, even though they do very different things with it. And the point was, this is how people use it. And, you know, when Apple shows us the technology behind things, and when they talk to us about what the new thing is that your phone can do, like, you know, it's nice that your phone, like the one that strikes me that I think of first is Apple Pay, right? So the first thing they say is, here's a little bit of the technology behind it that makes it work. But what you need to know is that you bonk your phone on the thing and you bought stuff.
Bonk your phone on the thing.
Right, so yeah. I don't know where I picked that up, but I just started going, ooh, they'll let me bonk my phone.
TikTok.
I'm going to go there now.
Speak technology.
Yeah, sorry to be technical with everybody. Bonk the phone on the thing. but I remember, like, that was the part they were excited about, was you can use your phone to buy stuff, right? And that was the thing that everybody was interested in. And it wasn't... the technology that goes into the Touch ID sensor, it wasn't secure enclave. Like, that wasn't the part that people as users, which is who Apple was marketing this to, that wasn't the part they were interested in. It was,
yeah,
I live in the future because I bonked my phone on the thing and I bought stuff and it's amazing. And that feeling, by the way, is intensified when it's your watch that you're using to pay for things. Like, that is the one moment where I feel like I live in the future.
There's another good example of that. I was at a WWDC one time. I think it was when Steve Jobs introduced iPhotos.
Uh-huh.
And he had an executive go out and spend some time on the beach with his kids and come back and show the family photos in an album and how you can share it and print albums and preserve this for the legacy of your family. And Steve Jobs finished up with a comment about how this kind of thing preserves memories and brings families together. And he said, this is why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never forgotten that comment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said things like that regularly, showing off some technology, you know, that enabled people to do some new thing or do something in a new, a more streamlined, a more interesting way.
Identifying what people want in that regard, whether it's family albums or listening to your favorite music or being able to connect with friends with FaceTime, identifying those human related elements and then bringing them to life with technology is what Apple does.
Mm-hmm. And that's the part that's interesting, you know, in doing some of this. And I think, you know, sometimes, like, on the technology end, for people like us who watch technology regularly, write about technology regularly, cover technology, sometimes that piece of it can get lost, right? So it may be revolutionary to somebody. You know, I remember walking family members through FaceTime the first time they had a phone or a computer or something that was capable of being able to do FaceTime. And I remember talking them through it and like, no, this is how it works and this is what you do. And, you know, sometimes we forget, like, that's amazing, you know? And when you think about what people can do now compared to how things were before, right? Like, I have family in Alaska and there are toddlers in Alaska who can take mom's phone and hit the button and call Nana and they talk all the time. So she has a relationship with kids in Alaska, which is there's an entire country between us and Alaska, and they still talk all the time. She, you know, such as it is, until they get bored and put down the phone and wander off or whatever. But they get the opportunity to have that relationship they wouldn't have otherwise. And, you know, stuff like that has gotten a lot easier, a lot more convenient. And sometimes the magic of that gets lost on us because we've been reporting on it for so long or been, you know, dealing in it in one way or another forever.
Right.
So it's nice to get those reminders once in a while. And it sounds like that's something that Angela Ahrens was very interested in when she was there, you know, because she sort of she does not come from technology to Apple. So.
Yeah, she said, I haven't watched this yet, but I'm interested to. She had this TED Talk and which Tim, I think, was kind of inspired by. I think she just talked about like basically similar things like enriching people's lives and the humanity and everything. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. Overall, it's been interesting to watch people sort of talk about how tech has lost its humanity and trying to watch people swing that back the other direction. So I've been curious to see what direction we end up.
What I'm sure she encountered was that vision clashing with the operational aspects and the financial aspects of the Apple retail stores.
Sure. Yeah, I absolutely believe that.
Because going into an Apple store is an interesting experience. It used to be great. It's still pretty good. Having to deal with the people aspect of it and the way people are handled in the Apple stores, the policies, the way the demands that are placed on the retail salespeople, what they have to know, what they have to do, how you treat customers and how you relate to them and how you schedule their fixes for repairs. That's a really complicated exercise in human encounters and relationships, all wrapped into the necessity for, you know, growing revenue.
Right. And what makes that so complicated? People.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of things get complicated once you add people to the mix. If it was all machines, it wouldn't be a big deal. You know, Daisy has no problem with her iPhone relationship, right? But because there's no people involved. Daisy is the machine they use to dismantle iPhones for people who have no idea what I'm talking about. So, it's an interesting interview if you get a chance. Definitely look through John's article. And then also John links to the original piece. You should go check it out. The other thing I wanted to talk about today, in a small way, is kind of a tip. And that tip is shortcuts for people who aren't using them. Shortcuts are a very cool thing that was introduced recently. Apple purchased the app Workflow, which was a way that you could automate certain things and have your iPhone or your iPad perform certain actions for you and save you a bunch of tapping and a bunch of steps. And Apple bought it and integrated most of that technology into Siri Shortcuts, or the Shortcuts app that you have in your phone. And there's a couple things that we wanted to talk about. And first of all, John, you said that you have a shortcut. You have a shortcut that you use.
The first shortcut I created was one that would fire up Apple Music, select my favorite playlist, and launch it. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have to fuss around with firing up music myself, you know, by tapping it and fishing around for the playlist. Mm-hmm. And it works fine. I like it. But there was something about the construct of shortcuts that didn't seem to be very short to me. And so after fussing with it for a while and finally getting it to work, maybe it's just because I'm a little older, I kind of lost interest in shortcuts because it wasn't saving me any time.
Right. But you
I'm
have
sure
one.
There are things that work. I do.
You have one you use and work, and that works, yeah. And you like it. And that was.
I can appreciate the limitations of iOS and how it has to be constructed.
Right.
But it just, you know, there are constructs and workflows that are either alien to your mind or exactly fit with your mentality. Mm-hmm. And the way shortcuts worked didn't seem to kind of mesh with my way of thinking.
Now, Andrew, you wrote one up recently about the news app.
I had a couple of ones. I love shortcuts. I use them every day. They basically, I've been able to automate all the annoying little things that happen with my work.
Yeah.
I wrote my own shortcut a couple weeks ago, I think. That was fun to do. It was the first complex shortcut I've created. I've created simple ones, but this one is complex in that it uses an API, so I had to figure out how to do that, how to parse the code that, you know, in the API URL that you have to do. So that was fun. And then I shared this shortcut from this guy, because there's this thing going around the news about this app on Mac that it directly opens up Apple News articles in Safari.
Nice.
Now, you can do that on iOS, you know, in the share sheet, but there's this shortcut that kind of cuts out that middle step. So instead of sharing the article to Safari and then sharing again to copy the article from there, you can just share the Apple News article to the shortcut. It will get the original link, which you can then share to something else or have it copied to your clipboard. So it's really, really handy.
That's nice. So one thing
and
for people...
A couple weeks ago, I basically subscribed to Club Mac Stories just so I could get my hands on Federico shortcuts, and I love them.
Yeah, he's a. I don't. There's no word for it, but the closest I can come is he's a fan of shortcuts. He does like all of his work on iOS, in essence. So he uses shortcuts to automate all kinds of things. One thing I will tell you for people who want to get started with Siri shortcuts is that you may have some already that you just don't know about. So if you open if you're on your phone or your iPad and you go to the settings app, in settings, there's the top block with, you know, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and everything. And then the next little block with notifications and do not disturb. And in that next block, you have an option for Siri and search. And in that preference, when you tap on it at the top, if you have any actual Siri shortcuts, then they will show up at the top. It'll show you my shortcuts and there'll be some number. And then just below that is suggested shortcuts. So if you do something often, your phone is suggesting, like, I know that you place this mobile Starbucks order every day, or like one of mine is checking the weather in Carrot Weather, and another one is sending a message to somebody. And then I have another one for the water tracker app I use to make sure I drink enough water. So these are shortcuts it's suggesting to me because I do those things often, and there's a way that I could do them more efficiently if I just used a shortcut to do it. So if you want to get started, you should look there. And also, I will tell you to check that suggested shortcut panel at different times during the day, because it's using the same sort of machine learning stuff that the Siri watch face uses. So if you normally text, you know, if you normally put in an order at 8:30 every morning, it's at 8:30 that's going to show up on your Siri watch face. And in the afternoon, if there's somebody you normally text about, like, plans tonight or something, then that will show up in the suggested shortcuts. And the reason I know that is because when I first looked at this, when we started talking about Siri shortcuts before we recorded, it had a completely different set of information than it has right now. So those are things that you can adjust, and you can set one of those up and then use it in order to do something a little bit more efficiently. But Andrew, another thing that you found is that you can get Siri to do things for you, but you can't, but only to a certain extent. Even though they're called Siri shortcuts, it's not necessarily that she can actually perform them for you.
Yeah, so there's a distinction. These Siri shortcuts you find in settings aren't the same thing as the shortcuts app, and you can run these Siri shortcuts even if you don't have the app. And I personally don't use them a lot. I use the app. But one thing I did find out was that you can't have Siri run shortcuts in the shortcut app. Apparently, they can only be ones that the system itself has suggested. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, you can't take one of these suggestions and do something else. But if you want to get in, if you want to dip a toe into automation on iOS, one way that you can do that is with the is with the ones in the suggested Siri and search panel. Using the shortcuts app is a slightly different thing that gets you a world of stuff. And particularly, the more time you spend on your iPad, I think the more interested you might be in shortcuts in the shortcuts app, because there's a lot of stuff that you can automate that way that keeps you from having to tap all around and get a lot of stuff done. As we find more of these, or create more of these, when we figure out that it's just taking too much time to do this simple little thing and I can get a shortcut to do it for me, we will tell you more about those. If you have tips, or if you have a shortcut that you particularly use, or you found one at one of the Siri shortcut websites that abound out there now, I know of like four or five of them already that are all full of interesting stuff. You can let us know at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter. You can even leave a comment in the show notes and talk to us about your favorites. So that's going to do it for today. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. John, thanks so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Andrew, thanks for joining me to talk about shortcuts.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And as I said, I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.